comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Be all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. I get email from people. You know, I say that at the beginning of every show. I get email from people once in a while, referring to that little cliche that I say at the beginning of every show. I want to assure you that's not a cliche. If I didn't think you mattered, and if I didn't think you had a right to know, I doubt I would be sitting here at this microphone every night. There are other things I do know how to do, you know, and I doubt I would be sitting here doing what I do if I didn't really believe that you have a right to know and that you matter. You do matter. We live in a world that likes to tell us in so many ways every day that, you know, we just don't matter. We're just a small cog in a big machine. Well, I don't buy it. Without you, the cosmos would not be what it is. You are that vital to it. So some people write to me when I say things like that and tell me that's woo-woo. Okay, that's still what I think. And we're going to be talking tonight with someone who also thinks you matter. His name is Dr. Courtney Brown. He's been with us before. It's always thoroughly interesting when he is here. And this one is going to be a little bit different for me. Because always before when he was here, I had an inkling of an idea about what we were going to talk about. This time, only he knows. So I'll find out when you find out. It should be interesting. And it'll be a little bit exciting, a bit of a mind bender as well. I guarantee you that. Very quickly, let me remind you that we have a free weekly newsletter. Now, that free weekly newsletter is called The K-Files, and we've been publishing that since the show began, way back in the blizzard in Kosovo. And we have folks who are subscribed to it, who have been subscribed to it since then. And that tells you it's got to be pretty good. And it's absolutely free, no strings attached. So if you're not getting it, you need to, and you do that by clicking where it says K-Files on my website. You're going to get an automatic email that has a link in it that you have to click to activate your subscription. We have to do that to make sure we don't spam anybody. So you click that link, and you're good to go. You'll start getting the K-Files. And then you won't be in the dark. There's no reason to be in the dark when light is available. And there's no genius in not getting the K-Files. You can't pat yourself on the back and say, well, I don't get it. You sure don't. So there's no genius in that. Click it and get it. Also, remember, we're listener-supported. So if you're not a member yet, click where it says join and join tonight. All right, we'll be back right after this. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk with Courtney Brown. Welcome back. During that break, that was a response to an email. See, I read and respond to things that you that you send to me, and some people send very flowery emails, and some people send emails that are kind of like soured milk. But I got one kind of like soured milk and said, you know, you always play that hard rock stuff. Why don't you play something a little bit easier during the break? There you go. Just for you. My guest is well known to our audience and well known around the world. And I'm delighted that he's back with us this evening. Courtney Brown, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Kevin, it is great to be here.
Well, I am delighted that you're here. And as I said to the audience at the top of the show, always before I have known a little bit about what we were going to talk about before we started the show. This time I don't, because you and I did not even discuss that. And so I get to find out when the audience finds out, and I guess that's right now. So before we get into that, and this may be what you were going to talk about, let me ask you to briefly address something that I have had some communication from listeners asking me about and wanting to talk with you about. I'm sure you're going to get some questions about it later when we open the phones, and that is the time travel aspect of remote viewing. Have you done any more with the time travel aspect, or is that kind of on the back burner right now?
Well, what do you mean by time travel? Are we talking about perceptions across time or actual physical moving across time?
Well, the question that was emailed to me had to do with, and I think actually we talked about this, but it had to do with this. Whenever you project, and that may not be the correct word, but take my layman's terminology and translate it for yourself there. But when you project into the future in remote viewing, is it possible that the people at that time who are existing at that time see you and perhaps experience you as a paranormal event?
Yes, it is possible depending on who you're looking at, who you're actually perceiving. For example, there are many experiences in which people have remote viewed extraterrestrials, and the extraterrestrials turn right around and look at you. Uh-huh. In fact, when you're remote viewing the Zeta Reticuli, or the so-called grays, we have found them in our experience to be extremely friendly and welcoming whenever we pop in. And, you know, remote viewing is always done under totally blind conditions, so the remote viewer doesn't know that they've been given a target in dealing with a UFO or a Zeta Reticuli or so on. And when they do, you end up sort of just in their ship, because that's what the target looks, that's what the target is, and you end up just describing it. They look straight at you in the eye and they say, it's this, you just get this feeling like, oh great, you're here. And we have had situations where they sort of grab you by the scruff of the neck, meaning you're supposed to be controlling what you're perceiving, and they sort of grab your perceptions by the scruff of the neck and may say, and sort of push you in certain directions and say, make sure you note this, and don't forget this over here, and look at that over here, this is very important. And so, with some extraterrestrials, they apparently are very advanced, and that does happen. And that doesn't really matter where you are in terms of time, whether you're past, present, or future. They still know that you're there. Others don't know at all. For example, in a past show that we had here, that I was on, we talked about the Martian base, or the high-tech mm-hmm. facility on Mars. That was a major project at the Farsight Institute. And remember, that has a very high-resolution NASA JPL Malin Space Science Systems photo of a horizontal spray, liquid spray coming out mm-hmm. of a nozzle, big nozzle, and a pipeline going into some domes. Yeah. And we did a remote viewing project of that. And whoever is in those bases, they're humanoid, they look like us, but who's ever in it did not know we were looking at them. I mean, we were all over that base, the remote viewers, under totally blind conditions, and not one observation said that that anyone in the base looked at them or noted that they were there when we were there. So it really depends on which group you're looking at, which group you're talking to. Some do and some don't. The more highly telepathic, or perhaps more highly evolved groups do know that you're there. And the lesser ones, the ones that are more like regular humans, they don't have the foggiest idea that you're there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like us.
Yeah, they're very much like us. I think the beings that are on Mars, whoever they are, there's not many of them. There's some facilities apparently on Mars that are inhabited, and I guess we're talking a few thousand people. But from what we've seen, they don't seem to be much different from us, to be quite honest.
Well, I want to come back to that, but I want to follow up that first question with this. The flip side of the question would be, how probable is it, how likely is it, that a lot of the paranormal experiences are incidents that people encounter right here, right now, in our time? How likely is it that that is remote viewers from another time that are being perceived here?
Buzz it by me one more time. I don't quite get it.
Okay. Got a guy that sees what he thinks is a ghost.
Okay.
How likely is it that that might be a remote viewer from another time that he's seeing?
Oh. In general, we have very little data that suggests that remote viewers, when they remote view humans, there's almost no data at all suggesting that the humans see them. And the reason I say almost is because when a remote viewer goes to another target and another remote viewer is sent to the same target and they don't know that, each of them don't know it, they do sometimes turn around and say, oh my goodness, so-and-so is here. That has happened. So that's one remote viewer sort of knowing that another remote viewer is there, and they actually see them and note that by name. Sometimes, not all the times, it's sort of rare, but it has happened in very noted cases. But we don't have really any information. So if somebody saw a ghost, we would have information of remote viewers saying, oh, by the way, this human is looking at me and thinking I'm a ghost. And we don't really get that type of data.
Okay.
By the way, you did ask me what we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
I want you to keep on with your questions, but I do want you to know I have something for you.
Okay, well, let's jump right to it. Oh, no, let's don't. I have another question about the Mars base.
Okay.
It's very interesting right now with the Mars Curiosity rover.
Yeah.
Because there are things being photographed that are way anomalous, photographed by this Curiosity rover, that are excessively anomalous, and NASA doesn't seem to be airbrushing out anything in the photographs. They just don't comment on it, but they're releasing the photographs with these massive anomalies in it. By massive, I don't mean in size, but I mean they're just very surprising anomalies.
Yeah, it seems to be that they really are moving in the direction of letting people discover these things without an announcement, meaning they don't seem to be moving in the direction of a major presidential announcement, and we don't seem to be moving in the direction of scientists making any type of major announcement, meaning there's no advance warning that that's going to happen. If they do that, which I've always hoped that the scientists would have the guts to do something major, then that would sort of change. But there does seem to be evidence that the authorities are saying, let's let these photographs leak out without comment and let the information slowly get out there. What they're obviously trying to do is to avoid pandemonium, because once the sort of house of cards falls, then everything will fall. The entire issue of extraterrestrials will fall. The entire issue of who we are as a species. The entire issue of the fact that we are not the first humanoid species here on this planet, and that humans have existed on this planet and risen to great heights as a civilization and destroyed themselves, collapsed, and that planet had to be rebuilt. Sort of, we're the species that never dies. We keep coming back. So, I mean, this whole history
of our
past. So
we're kind of like cockroaches then.
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're like the species that never dies. And I think what really is the bottom line that the authorities are really sort of worried about is the eventual realization that Earth is a created planet and the life on it was seeded, the intelligent life on it was seeded, and that the beings that we are specially designed. We didn't evolve just naturally, but that we were designed by a whole variety of extraterrestrial species, and that Earth originally was never intended just to run by itself, its own stuff. We were essentially a place where ETs could go. They could be born into this life and actually have a vacation, sort of have a human experience. I think the real shock of the whole evolutionary aspect of humanity on this planet came when the ETs realized how serious it was to incarnate or become a human in this high dense environment, because the two aspects that are so dramatic in our existence is the amnesia. We forget who we are and where we came from. We really think this is the first time we ever lived and we're just here and we don't have any memory of who we are. And the extreme lack of easy telepathy. All the other extraterrestrial species, well, not all, but most of the other, almost all the other extraterrestrial species seem to use telepathy as their primary mode of conversation, of communication. And we're the odd ones out. So it has been said by some extraterrestrials that we are greatly admired because we are the masters of limitations. In the sense that we come here knowing that we are going to be experiencing this extremely limited setting. And we do it because it's fun. It's an excitement. It's an adventure. But the thing that apparently shocks the ETs most and scares them is the fact that once you're here, you can get trapped. You can get lost. Meaning, once you're here, nobody escapes with just a visit for a weekend or one life and then zips away. That once you're here, you forget. And it doesn't matter who you are. Once you're here, you forget who you are and you don't have any real clear, easy telepathy to regain that knowledge. And that's part of the game. And so the issue with us is that we have to go through a situation of living lives after lives after lives after lives until we finally, after zillions of experiences here, finally regain sort of an awareness of who we are, where we came from, and manage to skip off of this place. But this is the rock you never leave. This is sort of the Alcatraz, if you want to think of that. And people come here and experience all types of things. And I think that was a real shocker for the extraterrestrials. They weren't actually expecting to have a situation where the place that they had designed to go to for a vacation would end up being a trap that scared the devil out of them, because if they went there, they might not get out. And so we do get out, but we don't get out very easily. And it takes a huge amount of effort and so on. I actually am of the opinion that whatever is coming in the post-2012 world is actually designed to help get a whole bunch of people out of here. Meaning, I think it's really hard for most people, like almost everybody, to actually leave this place. Mm-hmm. And I actually think the post-2012 world, because we're getting that from sort of intuitions, we're getting that from channeled information that's coming, and we're getting that from all types of different sources, and abduction experiences, where I don't like to call them that, but where people actually interact with extraterrestrials, then come back and talk to them and talk about it. They seem to be all saying the same thing, that this is a time period that's very special, and that it's a highly condensed time period where there are multiple realities, but they're all seeming to funnel through this period. And the extraterrestrials themselves don't really know what's going to happen. They sort of know the outcome in the end, but it's really hard to predict exactly how this is all going to turn out. And they don't want to mess with it either, so they're just sort of standing back and just sort of letting it happen. But I think the ultimate goal of this is to get us out of here. And I think some people won't be able to get out, and they'll have to start the cycle over again and probably go other places. But I get the feeling that it's turned out to be a real challenging growth environment that really pushes you to the forefront of growth and consciousness, and it's like really admired by extraterrestrials that still maintain their telepathy and so on. And on the other hand, they admire it because it's so damn hard. It's not easy. And I had a friend who was a really great remote viewer. And he was at a conference, and his sister was there. She was very much into the New Age stuff. And she came up to me and said, you know, when I finish with this life, I'm never coming back here. This is the dorkiest place ever. I'm going to go someplace cool where there's telepathy and all that. I'm going to be like an ET. I'm going to go someplace with telepathy and all the good stuff. And I sort of looked at her and I said, whoa, I think you're missing the whole point. You came here in order to leave where they were because you wanted to have this limited experience because it's so fun here. It's very much like you go on a surfboard. And you are on a surfboard and you go out into the beach and you do the waves. And, you know, you have limitations. You're on a board. And you're riding these huge waves. I mean, there's no motor. You only have a swimsuit, a board, and you're trying to get through the ocean with it. And you're riding waves. So what would you do? Would you sort of say, oh, that is so stupid. I mean, next time I go into the water, I'm going to get a big big ocean liner or a motorboat or something like that. It's so much cool. And you look at the surfer, and the surfer is just going to look at you and say, I think you missed the point. It's fun to be on this surfboard. And so I get the idea that that's really what it's all about.
We have to step away for a break. We will return, though, in just a moment with Courtney Brown. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is Dr. Courtney Brown. And Courtney, as we went away for break, you were talking about how being here is kind of like surfing. We came here because it's fun. And, you know, really, you see some people. And we need to get on to what you said. You really have something for us this evening, so we'll move on to that. But you know, it's you see people that every single thing in life is just drudgery for them. They just hate being here, and they take things so seriously, like things that don't matter really matter, and you know, it becomes such a burden to them just to get through the day. And then there's others kind of like me that say, oh, what the heck, man, I woke up this morning, I won, everything else is incidental.
Yeah, you know, we're coming to a point where it will be realized that we do, really do, we really, really, really do create our own reality with a time lag. Meaning, in this three-dimensional type of physical existence that we have, we have talked about this before, Kevin, that physicists have never found anything solid anywhere. No computer is solid, no table is solid, no house is solid, no planet is solid. It's all made of these subatomic particles. But even when you look at these subatomic particles, they've never found a solid billiard ball type thing ever. In fact, the number of physicists that are still looking for something solid are called particleists, and they're becoming an extinct species, basically. What we see is all substance is actually made of just energy. And so E equals mc squared, c is the speed of light, c squared is a constant, so E equals m scaled, so energy equals mass. So there is nothing that they've ever found except frequencies. We live in a frequency-based universe, and in a frequency-based universe, the only thing that actually can happen is energy manipulating energy. That means that when you connect all the dots, our thoughts actually create things. And so since our thoughts themselves can only be energy, so when we design, when we think of things, when we imagine things, we're actually marshaling energy, we're moving things. And we're getting to a point where people will eventually realize that it's not a New Age sort of saying that just makes you feel good. It's a real reality that our thoughts actually create reality. The preponderance of our thoughts actually creates what we actually see in our lives manifest. And this particular reality is such that there is a time delay. It doesn't happen right away. But if you're remembering your dreams, one of the things that I have discovered is that what we often think of our dreams as sort of like our brains are computational machines that are just running amok during nighttime. But that's not at all what they are. What happens is it takes a lot of energy to function in this physical life. And when we go to sleep, basically the body shuts down and we reemerge into the world that we are before we inhabited this body. So we go back to what some people might want to call the spirit world. And two of the things I'd like you to remember about dreams. I bet nobody in this audience can ever remember a dream where they spoke to somebody and moved their mouth, like with words and air coming out. Meaning, whenever you speak to somebody in a dream, it's always thought to thought. That's literally how communication goes. Nobody can ever remember a dream where they actually are talking like I'm talking now, where air is coming out, hitting a microphone and moving things. And also, the other thing about a dream is that when you want to go someplace, you are there immediately. So there is no time delay in the non-physical realm. You create things. You create houses, all the things that you see there, and you create instantly, and you interact with people instantly, and you go from place to place instantly, and you communicate instantly, all telepathically. But when we come here, the rules are different. The characteristics of this physical universe is that there's a time lag for things to manifest. We forget who we are, and there's so much limitation of what we can actually conceive of or think about that when we get our dreams and we wake up, the amount of information that's in the dream simply can't get all into our thinking structure of the physical brain. So we forget the dreams. They just go away. And the only way you can sort of remember pieces of them, and only you get pieces at very best, is to have a pad and pencil next to the bed and write them down in the middle of the night when you get them. And even then you're just getting vague, you know, just snapshots of something that was really big and really complicated. Meaning, in the spirit world, we have really big and complicated lives. And when we come back here, we really can't, it's so big and so complicated, we can't really get much. And so we remember only these snapshots that we think of as dreams.
You know, but I've had this happen where, now I don't dream. And I know I've been told by experts, everybody dreams. And my answer is, how do you know? You're not in my head. I don't dream. But I remember when I used to. And I have had it happen where I would be having a dream where something momentous and important was taking place in the dream, something that I recognized at that moment as this is important. And I would wake up, and as I would wake up, it would vanish, and I couldn't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that happen.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get to what it is that you really wanted to talk about this evening.
Well, it's not that I really wanted to talk about it. It's that it just sort of felt right.
Okay.
And it was something I've never talked about. And I was actually thinking about what I should talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking about it the last few days. I said, normally I come with an agenda. We're going to talk about this project or that project. And this time I really just wanted to talk with you and interact with you and your listeners. But I did say, you know, what do I want to talk about? And then something just hit me. And I said, you know, I think it's time to tell people about something that's big, something that happened to us at Farsight. And
for our new listeners, Farsight is Farsight Institute.
Yeah.
Courtney Brown is the founder of that, and it is one of, if not the premier remote viewing institute on the planet.
Yeah.
It's describe it for us. It's the military grade.
It's the Farsight Institute,
mm-hmm.
and that's spelled Farsight, like seeing far. And the website is www.farsight.org, O-R-G, because we're a nonprofit. And we absolutely clearly are the leading and really only major science shop on the planet that studies the phenomenon of remote viewing as it is done using military or military-derived protocols or procedures for remote viewing. So the U.S. military used remote viewing for espionage purposes. We work with people that were in the military, that did remote viewing in the military, have trained a large number of civilian, second and third generation people, and those are the remote viewers that we use. They're really, really extraordinarily talented. And we've done a whole bunch of projects, and we have really mastered the realm of public participation in the data collection process and the data verification process. We really don't like the idea of saying, we got these results, trust us. I don't believe anybody should trust anybody on anything. Mm-hmm. And we really have mastered the realm of having people watch our data, collect our data, verify that the data were done, that no cheating was involved. And we have all these projects, and we're literally the leading place where that stuff is done. And actually, for those listeners who want to sort of hit the ground running and see everything we do, if you don't mind me making a plug, Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead.
At the Farsight Institute, right at the top, farsight.org, you'll see a link to a DVD that we put out just this year that summarizes all of our major projects, and that includes the climate project, or the so-called post-2012 Earth Changes project, which is on everybody's mind because it's every day that we go through something with one new thing after the next, looking more and more like the Earth changes that we saw with incredibly good and cleverly designed, if I don't mind saying so myself, scientific procedures used for collection of those data with regard to randomization of targets. I mean, it was just really cleverly done, and the results are so striking. So that Farsight Experiments Volume 1 is available now, and it really helps our institute when people get it and watch it. It helps because then you talk about what we got, and that's good because you get the word out. And the price of the DVD does help us do what we do, which is really important. But anyway, what I was going to tell you is that something that's sort of known really only to some insiders at Farsight and the U.S. intelligence community, they know it well,
mm-hmm.
is the extraterrestrial involvement in the creation of Farsight.
Hmm.
And it was so overt and so constant that I it was always sort of a quiet thing, but the masses sort of never really knew. But it was impossible for farsight to emerge as it has done without help. And some of the help was so open, so blatant, that I just thought people should actually hear the story. Now, I'm not asking people to believe it or to, you know, make it into a situation where, you know, they have to say it's false, because if we, you know, show me, like the Missouri show me state, if I don't see it, I don't believe it. You know, you don't have to go one way or the other. I just thought it was time for people to know what actually happened in the creation of farsight, because it gives you a little bit of an idea, at least of my understanding, of how important farsight will be for the future. Because in my view, the ETs invested a lot to get us where we are today, and they have told us point blank that farsight and the role of remote viewing is absolutely unbelievably huge in the future. And so I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what actually happened, if you want to hear it.
Sure, go ahead. We'd love to hear it. Now, let me tell you, we're a minute and 10 seconds away from break.
Well, so, let's do this.
But that's okay. Go ahead and start, and we'll...
Let me talk, and then, mm-hmm. Kevin, if you don't mind, crudely interrupt me at a blink of an eye and say, hold that thought, and just tell me, and I'll stop. We'll pick it up whenever the break starts.
All right, you're on.
This all started back in the 1990s when I got tenure at my university, and I was sort of cockily walking around with my wife through the dental building at my university, and I saw a flyer on a table that was just left there saying these abductees were going to be talking about their experiences at this thing. And I said, oh, that sounds so cool. I think that I'd go to something like that. That sounds so wild and crazy. So I went, and I saw people who looked awfully reasonable. One was a manager of a major defense corporation who decided he just was going to tell his story. And he told the story about E.T.'s interacting at the Defense Corporation and the company and shutting the place down for a couple hours, and they went through everything, and it was Zetas that were coming in. And I said, my gosh, that guy seems like a real ordinary business person.
Hold that thought. We have to go to break, and we'll be right back. Yeah, I apologize for that squeal. That was probably Brent's fault in Wyoming. But anyway, we'll deal with that when he calls in later, if he does. We'll have a talk with him about that. All right, we're talking this evening with Dr. Courtney Brown from the Farsight Institute. And Courtney, you were just beginning the story about E.T. involvement in the creation of farsight.
And I'm going to skip over a lot of details that are probably very interesting for all of your audience, but so much has happened that I simply can't include them and still get through the show.
Okay.
So what happened was I saw this group of abductees sort of talking about their stuff, and then they announced that there was going to be some type of meeting in downtown Decatur, which is near Atlanta, and it was going to be called a TREAT conference, T-R-E-A-T. And it was supposed to be a big deal, and a lot of military people were going to be there. So I went there, and sure enough, there was a lot of military people there, and there were a lot of people talking about the extraterrestrials, and everybody from generals, majors, colonels, everybody was there. And they started openly talking about the remote viewing project. This is the mid-1990s, and early 1990s. And they started talking about the remote viewing, and often as it was used with extraterrestrial investigations in the military. And I said, whoa, if this is real, I'm going to pursue this. And so I went up to some of the military guys and I said, I want to know how to do this. And I don't care if, you know, if I'm a professor or not, if it's real, I want to know this. And they said, no, we're not teaching anybody. And they were basically interested at that time at, you know, making movies and books and doing their own thing. Anyway, but one of the things they did tell me is one of the things that they did was to use the Monroe Institute materials. Monroe Institute is in Faber, Virginia, and they use a audio technology called HemiSync with tapes. And so I ordered the whole bunch of stuff, everything I could possibly get, I ordered, and I started going through their Gateway Experience course, listening to each course, each tape, like two or three times, way overdosing it. And finally, near the end of the course, I was teaching a course up at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor during the summer in nonlinear mathematics. And I was in one of these deep states listening with my headphones on. And I was also doing the TM City program, the Transcendental Meditation Advanced Program. And after meditating and then listening to the HemiSync tones, the signals, and you know, tapes, I was done and just sort of resting there, and this like being just sort of bashed right into my consciousness, a light being with my eyes closed and everything, and said, the remote viewing course that you wanted is now ready. It's all set up. Contact the person that you were told to contact. And I said, what? And I tried to follow the person, and the person was out of there. And I was like, that was the end of the message. And I said, this is crazy. The person said they were not going to teach. That was not going to happen. So I went to my class, I taught my class, I went to my office, and I said, this is crazy. And I said, okay, well, the last thing I heard was the town that the person would be in. Let me just call. And sure enough, I was able to get a phone number, and I called the person. And the person picked up and said, lo and behold, we just had our first student, and you will be our second. And it's all set up, and it's really set up just right now. I'm amazed that you called. It's sort of surprising that you called. Anyway, so I made the appointment, and I set up to do the course, and I also went off to Monroe Institute themselves to do a week-long course with them to get ready, and I did it. And then I started to do this first remote viewing project, which was just really an exploration of the use of remote viewing with this military guy, and I did it, and that resulted in the book called Cosmic Voyage, which is out of print now, but it was a bestseller in its day. But it's still available as a free download from my personal website, CourtneyBrown.com, in the speculative nonfiction section. Anyway, so during that time, I had a ton of experiences under blind conditions, remote viewing extraterrestrials, because that was what the whole book was about. And a lot of things happened. But after the book came out, before the book came out, there was a lot of fighting with the military. Even the person I was working with, who was really wonderful during the entire year that I was working with him, started to change as all the military people started to fight among themselves. And it was almost like I couldn't recognize anybody. They were just fighting, and, you know, it was really weird. And so as my book was starting to come out, I said, what's going on? Anyway, I was up at the For a month, I was up doing something called rounding, which is like 5 hours of meditation, at what was then called Maharishi International University, now called Maharishi University of Management, in Fairfield, Iowa, because I was an advanced meditator. And I was up there doing rounding, and I was up there to get a message. I was there for a whole month, and I was saying, I'm meditating, going real deep, and I'm going to get that message. What do the ETs want me to do? And what are the spiritual beings, the heavens, what do they want me to do? All I saw was this fighting going around with these military people. And they were fighting each other, and I was caught in the middle because I saw the book was coming out and money was in the air. And it was. And I meditated in this deep state for like a solid month. Finally, and nothing came through, nothing at all. Finally, I was there for the last evening. And then I was going to meditate one time in the morning and then hop in the car with my family and go home. And I was there for the last evening, and I said, oh, this is so screwy. No message is coming through. Let me just relax and just meditate. This one's just for me. I'm not listening for anything. And I just closed my eyes and was in bliss. And 5 minutes later, this being, this luminous being, blew into my mind with like the force of a Mack truck. I mean, it was not ambiguous at all, and said, and said the following. This was the message that he said. It was a male. You are to develop your plans as you see them. And then it said, all the resources that you need will come to you at the time you need them. And then with emphasis, he said, but not before. The idea that all the resources that we needed would come at the last minute, right when we need them, but not before. Sort of with the idea that if they gave us to it early, we'd misuse them. And then the being said, and you're going to have to break off from all the military people. That is not your path. You have to do something separate. And then, boom, he was out of there. And like in my mind, I went racing after him. It was like faster than a flying saucer. I mean, I was racing and I couldn't catch him no matter what. And I said, no, come back. And he didn't come back. And I just had to finish my meditation. I meditated the next morning as well, completely uneventful. Hopped in the car with my wife and son, and boom, I was back in Atlanta some 2 days later. And it was a long drive. Mm-hmm. And so that happened. And then I started the Farsight Institute eventually. I had to break off with the military people I was working with, and I had to start something completely separate. And so I started up this Farsight Institute. And it was very interesting. A lot of people were getting the book and reading the book and mailing us. And then one person mailed us, and my wife and I both looked at the email. I mean, not the email, the physical mail, and said, we feel something about this letter that we should keep it. And so I said, okay, I'll keep it. And later on, I communicated with that person, and that person turned out to be our webmaster eventually. And she said that she was waiting for our call, that she was told that we were going to call and something would do. Anyway, so she ended up working for us at the Institute and as the webmaster. And then something weird happened to her. As soon as she started working, and I swear, Kevin, this is going to sound really crazy, but I swear this is what happened.
Okay.
As soon as she started working with us, like the next day, when she woke up in the morning and went to the bathroom at 3:00 in the morning, that was apparently her normal schedule, this Zeta Reticuli short guy would meet her on the way to the bathroom, sort of stun her, and like dump a whole bunch of stuff into her brain, and then she would continue on to the bathroom after that and go to bed, and she'd wake up in the morning. She wouldn't remember it during the day, while she was sleeping, but she'd wake up in the morning and she'd remember that this gray fellow, or this Zeta Reticuli person, dumped all this stuff into her brain. And the instruction was that she was supposed to come into the office in the morning and report to me what he said. And so I ended up naming him the gray dude. And he kept doing this for one solid year. For 1 year, he kept interrupting her trip to the bathroom every night, dumping a bunch of stuff, telling us all types of stuff that was going on. And she would come in, and I eventually started right in the beginning taking notes, because I realized that this was, you know, it didn't matter who she was. She had a whole bunch of personal issues as well, but it's not that she was ideal or anything. It's just that the information was valuable in and of itself, by itself. And she reported it, and I just simply wrote it down. I couldn't have got the information. And I ended up getting a binder, and the binder.
Okay, we'll pick up right there when we come back, but the break is taking over. We'll be back, folks, right after this. I guess you could notice, folks, I did play some softer rock at the beginning, but it's progressively getting back to my style. Can't help that. My guest this evening is Dr. Courtney Brown, and I want to welcome those of you
who are joining us just now in this second hour. You've missed a universe of information, and you have my sincere sympathy. Also, my best wishes, hopes, and prayers that you never suffer that tragedy again. Always be here from the very first second, from the opening bell, because if you don't, you're going to miss universes of information. So Dr. Courtney Brown, the founder of Farsight Institute, is sharing with us an amazing story about ET involvement in the founding of the Farsight Institute. Now, when we went away for break, you just told us about the lady that worked at Farsight Institute. She's a webmaster. And for a solid year, every night, she would be, she'd get up to go to the restroom, and the little gray guy would interrupt her trip to the restroom and dump a lot of stuff into her mind. Now, she was reporting that to you. You were then taking notes, and you said the information in and of itself was important. What kind of information?
I'll tell you what he said. But the point is, it doesn't matter who the messenger was. The point is, the information, if you just take it on face value from whatever the source, it was unbelievable. It eventually ended up being I had to buy a really big spiral notebook and put leaves in it and pages in it, and it filled up three solid inches of paper at the end of a year. I mean, I was writing on both sides, and it was just so much stuff. And now there's a couple of things. You can sort of say, well, look, if this was true, why didn't this extraterrestrial, this person we eventually, I ended up calling the gray dude, why didn't he just, you know, drop in on me? Apparently, it's actually a bit risky. It's difficult. And meaning, if I were to interact with someone who had a very integrated personality going all the way up to sort of their higher dimensions, whatever it is, like the ETs are, it's disorienting for us, and it's apparently a bit disorienting for them as well. For them to really interact with us on this deep physical level, it's not easy. And for us to interact with them, it's hard. And our subconscious gets really freaked out, and so we get scared and so on. So the webmaster was just a person who, forget about who she was in real life. She was a person who apparently, in my view, had made an arrangement before she was even born to do this job. And she did it. And she did it well. She simply reported everything. So the information was being given to me, but it had to go through the webmaster so that I wouldn't be disrupted. I wouldn't be disoriented. I wouldn't be sort of weirded out. I had to basically live in my 3D world. And so I was as skeptical as anybody else, but I couldn't turn away the information because the information was valuable in and of itself. And so what basically happened was as follows. The information came across as three different ways. The first way was information about our remote viewing procedures themselves. They wanted them changed. The military stuff was great, but they wanted upgrades, a lot of them. And so I started to fiddle with the procedures a lot, and I ended up developing procedures for not just remote viewing physical items, but for societies and leadership structures, parliamentary structures, how societies are organized. And then I did other procedures that were for technology transfer procedures. And if I look, for example, at the society, I call them the social and political protocols. When I was doing them, I wasn't telling the webmaster what I was doing. She knew I was working on them, but she didn't know. I wasn't telling her what the steps were. She would come in the next morning and say, "The gray dude said you're doing X, Y, and Z." I mean, it was exactly what I was doing. And he said, "That's not right. You have to do A, B, and C." So I said, "Yeah, you're right. That's exactly." So they were crafting these procedures literally and it was a collaborative effort. I was working on them, and they were telling me what to do through the webmaster. But again, I wasn't telling her what I was doing. She was just reporting what the guy, what the gray dude was saying, and so I would just do all those. And these procedures were like unbelievable. They were so incredible. And, you know, if anyone sort of looks at them and sort of says, I designed them myself, I had to say, I didn't design them myself. I was following instructions. I was involved in the design, but a lot of information was just coming. And then there was advanced SRV, which doesn't look at all like anything the military did, but it's using these templates and all types of stuff. And that came out of those guys as well. So it was, a really interesting experience for that entire year. Okay, so designing of the procedures. And then there was something about the stuff that we were doing. The military, the Defense Intelligence Agency, became very interested in the Grey Dude and the briefings. So I won't go how we know this, but I do know this for a fact. I mean, an unambiguous fact. We actually had unequivocal, physical, blatant evidence that this was happening. They bugged our offices, and they recorded everything. They were following everything. And we got from them, there was one person from the agency that actually communicated with us. It was so funny. He said that the information that the gray dude was telling us was incredibly accurate, and it bugged them to no ends. He said, his own words were, it was a real pain in the ass. That's what he said. They were so ticked off at that. And they said the government definitely didn't like, you know, non-government people knowing more than they knew about certain things. And so what the gray dude was telling us was basically telling us how to navigate through that very tenuous year. And a couple things happened. This is going to shock you, and I'm just going to tell you the truth, Kevin, and all of your listeners, feel free to disregard it. The remote viewing stuff that we do at the Institute, the science projects, they're completely independent of all of this. I'm just giving you a history window, and if you want to say this is bonkers, this is crazy, feel free. I'm just telling you what actually did happen, and if you don't want to believe it, that's fine. The actual results that we have at the Farsight Institute are completely independent of all of this. So if you want to look at just the data for themselves, that's fine. But basically, what happened was the military became very concerned about us. They sent a card-carrying, absolutely certified spook to our offices. And we had a whole bunch of people around, so there were witnesses all over the place. And he came with somebody else. And he said he was dragged off by the guys in the suits, the sort of men in black type guys in the suits. And he was given a message to tell us. And he said that we were getting too big. They told them to tell us that we were getting too big and they needed to tap us down. And so they didn't want to extinguish us, but they wanted to tap us down. And then he said, so the current thing that they're thinking of is going to be health related, because apparently Dave Morehouse was coming out with his book and he seemed to have had a nervous breakdown. So they're going to be scattering the airwaves and the internet with remote viewing is dangerous to your health. And I said, and that was the best angle they could come up with. So they said, okay. I said, okay, they're going to tap us down. All right. And then what happened was Chuck Schrammick, who was a really nice guy, an amateur astronomer totally, took over 100 pictures of the Hale-Bopp comet, and there was an anomaly in these pictures. He released one of those 100 pictures onto his own personal website. He was very soon contacted by two of the biggest astronomers. Actually, I think it was one. One of the biggest astronomers, but that astronomer referenced somebody else. There were sort of two guys involved. And Chuck Schrammick, who was a newscaster in Houston, sort of took the phone away from his head and said, like, how did you get my number, A? And B, why is, like, one of the biggest astronomers on the planet Earth calling me? I'm just a common Joe with a telescope. And they wanted him to take that picture off of the web, and they were really angry about it. So he then shared the photo with myself and a late-night host on coast-to-coast radio. And and it was sort of up there. And then when we saw the photo, we said, oh, this is so interesting. What a cool target it would be. So we sent out three remote viewers to look at the target. And they came back with basically it looked like it was a portal, like an energy opening, a portal. And best I can figure it out from it, it looked like there was like metal ships like coming through the portal. So we were sort of getting information like there were ships there, but also it was a portal of some type. And we could have actually done more with it, but I basically just read the sessions to over coast to coast. And I said, this is really interesting. This is the type of thing we like to do. We like to investigate these things. And that's just sort of what I did. I just sort of left it that way. And then, Chuck Stramick was on the radio also at the time. And now I never said that there was a UFO following Hale Bopp. I never said that. But the talk show guy actually, really, that's how it evolved. It evolved with the talk show guy sort of blasting this stuff day after day, month after month. And this anomaly became the UFO following Hale Bopp. And they eventually called it the Hail Mary. And it was just crazy stuff going on. Anyway, what was really weird is our webmaster got contacted from someone she knew. It turned out to be a complete fraud type of thing, but she believed this person. It was an academic, actually, who said that he was involved in research doing this thing. It turned out later that he was an academic who was simply getting money from the Defense Department. That was where his funding came from. And he said that they were going to make a major announcement about this extraterrestrial type of thing and sent photos to us. Now, these photos actually came as three rolls of 35 millimeter film. We developed them. Two of them were completely blank, and the other roll had three images on it. And the image was, it later became totally distorted on the internet. The images were very clear that they were printed from a film printer that was back in the old days when people did PowerPoint slides on film, on slides, and you went and put them into a slide projector. But the original images came from a CCD, or, you know, charge coupling device image, digital, went into a computer, and then were printed, like you print something with paper, but you can also print it with film.
Yeah.
Back in those days, that's what they did. So it was really incredibly high-resolution stuff. You had to look with a magnifying loop to actually see the digital pixel lines. They were razor-sharp. And then this guy talked to our webmaster and basically gave this long story and convinced her totally about this whole thing, that there was going to be a major announcement in a couple of weeks. And that they wanted us to use those photos for targeting. Now, we never actually used them for anything. We never touched those things. We just got them in the mail and developed them and said, oh, this is interesting. But we did remote viewing. But they were hoping we would do them. We would use them for something. Anyway, we got onto the late night show and told them about what the astronomer was telling us. Now, he turned out to be not even an astronomer. It was a complete fraud. You know, never trust an academic. That's what I learned. I used to say academics were totally trustworthy. What I found, because I'm an academic, what I found out is look at where they get their money. Because I found out the whole story later. But basically what happened was they wanted us to use it for targeting, and then they knew that the photos would eventually get out and be discredited. And they wanted us to have used it for targeting and then have remote viewing sessions up there and then for having the photos discredited. But unfortunate for their plans, we never used them for anything. But we did talk about them on late night radio. But we talked about them with the understanding that, you know, they wouldn't be released. Well, eventually they were released. And then we got sort of blamed. Like, it was like, we did something wrong. All we did is open the mail. But that was what they wanted. And then this huge commotion came about. It was the biggest internet type of whatever story you've ever seen in your life. about some type of fraud. And I said, what fraud? We didn't use him for anything. We just opened the mail. But that's the way it was presented to people, that there was some fraud, that we had these photos, that we submitted these photos, and thus the whole Hale-Bopp thing. And our whole institute basically, you know, people were running from us. They stopped taking our courses. And so then we found out later, we actually got one of the DIA guys. They actually came to us. One of them actually came to us and told us the whole story. They made all the connections. They had the photos sent to us. They had everything. And it didn't matter that we never used them for anything. The public was just confused anyway. And they decided to abandon the mental health issue with regard to remote viewing when the Hale-Bopp thing came about, because they said that was much better. So they said, let's do that and we'll tap them down that way. And it crushed. And then they said, you know, they said that was more than enough. And I actually heard from one card-carrying intelligence person afterwards. I said he was absolutely certain that someone got a promotion based on how well that campaign went. Anyway.
Well, that is the way they work, because they do understand that regardless, I promise you every time I say this, I get very negative email from one or two people, and I will this time. But these guys understand that the majority of the population are running on two gray cells, and one of them has just had a blowout. And the majority of the population are sheeple. And all you have to do is say it, and then they'll say, well, you know, it was proven that, and they fill in the blank.
And the interesting thing is, while this whole thing was happening, the plot was they had done a personality profile of myself and the webmaster. And the plot was, based on their personality profile, they thought that eventually the webmaster would cave in and disclose the identity of the person that sent her the photos. And that would then go on late night radio. And then the person would sue us and shut down the institute. That was the plot. Mm-hmm. But I actually supported the webmaster, and I said, no, we stick to our word. We gave our word that we would not release the person's name. It was not us to release the photos in the first place. We're going to stick to our word no matter what happens to us. And that they weren't expecting. But it didn't really matter, because the house of cards came down afterwards. However, get this, when this was all going on, you know, a lot of stuff had to be told to us. The gray dude, without fail, every single night, came in and told our webmaster what to do the next day, because the goal was to shut down the institute. And the gray dude, and we didn't make any mistakes to fall into any of those traps, not because we were so brilliant. The gray dude kept telling us what to do. And he told us everything about the plan and everything that was going on. And then the gray dude actually said that they were going to have one of the intelligence guys break off and actually leave the DIA. And it was a big sacrifice for them, because they had this person inside that was sort of on a friendly soul. And they said it was more important that we get told what the truth was. And this person actually left the DIA, broke off, came to us, showed us transcripts of a phone calls that we had that was really sensitive stuff, demonstrated everything and told us the whole story of what went on. So there was no ambiguity of what actually happened. And then what happened was, and Kevin, this is going to sound really weird to your listeners, and I don't mind if everybody says it's the craziest thing. It's going to sound crazy. But
you're on the right show for it then, because that's what we're all about.
Okay. Well, then the gray dude gave an image to our webmaster in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning always, that there was going to be some type of nuclear detonation somewhere on the planet, and that we should target it. That's all. They wanted us to do it by ourselves, but that was it. And we kept postponing and postponing and postponing. And then finally the gray dude showed up and showed the webmaster the image of a clock that was ticking, meaning we didn't have that much more time. We had to do it. And so we assigned the remote viewers to do it, a whole bunch of them. We assigned everybody to find out what this was. And I got all these sessions in, and I just said, okay, I'm sure this is going to be something dealing with like Israel or something like that, and Middle East or something, because they got so many enemies and so on. So I just started analyzing the sessions and looking at all the sessions. and we were not targeting like the nuclear bomb or anything like that. We were just targeting, we targeted as the thing the gray dude wants us to see. Something like that. And then I got all the sessions in, and lo and behold, it was New York City. And what happened, the sessions were really clear. This was just when the Soviet Union was collapsing, and what happened was there was apparently 125 suitcase-sized nuclear weapons that went missing. They were mm-hmm. little small things. And I got that from General Lebed, the general of the Soviet Union, who said, we're missing 125 of those suckers. And that was public. And then, we did this analysis and we got the whole thing. There was some high-level Soviet people, just a few, who were really ticked off, and they were gonna take this suitcase type thing and nuke the United Nations. They were just really outraged. The whole Soviet Union collapsed and people were gonna pay for it. And the remote viewing sessions were absolutely unambiguous. They were based in Long Island and the whole thing. So what we did was we put it up. I didn't know what else to do with it. So I just put it up on the website. Anyway, we became the laughing stock of the entire world because we put up this stuff about a nuclear threat on New York, to New York. Mm-hmm. And everybody laughed at us. This was after the Hale-Bopp stuff and everything. Everyone was laughing at us, and everyone was, the people at my university probably thought I just lost it completely. I mean, I didn't know what else to do with it. And, so we put it up, but lo and behold, that DIA person that actually came to us, he told us that they took it extremely seriously. Everything that we told them and everything they recorded, they took totally seriously. And this whole nuclear thing actually was taken extremely seriously. And it so turned out that soon after that, it was actually released in the press. This was during the Clinton administration. That there were Lithuanian and Soviet people who were arrested in New York and while they were trying to deliver some type of delivery device, nuclear delivery device, they were caught and then some of them escaped and they went and they were finally arrested in Miami of all places. Now they never in the news report said that they actually had the nuclear weapon, but these delivery devices, so they made it sound more palatable that it was just these delivery devices but not actually the weapon. But information was coming out right after that. They were actually chasing these people. And then we got information from the Grey Dude that was basically, we did the government a real big favor. And that was the last we heard of the government. Meaning, they stopped bothering us. We haven't been bothered since. They let us do our things. We never grew big. I always knew that if we ever really grew big again, well, not ever, but if we grew big again during that time period, they would get worried. And I said, okay, we're just going to... So we hunkered down and just started doing our own stuff.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. And I want to open the telephone lines when we come back, Courtney. We'll be back, folks.
Again, and you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
Welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, and this is Kevin Smith, the world's hottest talk show host. And my guest this evening, Courtney Brown. Courtney, I do want to open up the telephone lines, but let me give you an opportunity to finish what you were telling us about. You said that was the last time you had any contact by government people and any problems.
That was the end of our problems. They basically just left us alone, and it's been that way ever since. And it's been wonderful. I mean, we've just been doing our own work and being very scientific and so on. and just developing remote viewing. However, when you noted in the beginning of the show that we are really the only major science shop on the planet, and that the studies that we have are really big, I mean, really huge, and now you're really sort of seeing the full breadth of all of that. Kevin, what happened during that year that the Gray Dude was giving us all this information through our webmaster? The Gray Dude was also telling us not just about procedures, but also telling us what we would end up doing. And all of these major projects, this whole thing is the vision that the Gray Dude helped us create by telling us what we were going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so in all of this detailed notes that I took over that entire year, a lot of that was just fulfilling what was being told we were going to do. And for example, one of the most important discoveries that we made was that the targeting, when you actually write the targets for a remote viewing session and when you do a public demonstration of remote viewing, we found out that it's better if you do the remote viewing sessions first and then assign the targets or create the targets afterwards in the future. Well, that wasn't my idea. I mean, I've taken credit for that idea, and I've written a book on that idea. I've written an article published in a major peer-reviewed scientific journal about that idea. It looks like my idea, and that's how most of the science studies at Farsight. But it was, you know, how structured. We do the sessions first, the targets come afterwards, and we basically revolutionize how remote viewing is done by lots of people. But that was the Gray Dude's idea. He said, mm-hmm. We have it backwards. And we were trying to actually control the situation so that we couldn't be messed up in the public demonstration of remote viewing by the government, by the DIA people, who had all types of interesting ways to mess us up if they knew what the targets were when we were doing the public demonstration. So we had to come up with ways to make it so that the targets didn't exist while the remote viewing was being done, so that they couldn't mess us up. And then all of this came up, but it was the Gray Dude's idea. And, you know, it was fascinating to see all that happen. And then the last thing I want to say is that the Gray Dude basically told us of the role that we would play in the future. And he said that there would be some things that would happen. And he explicitly told us what to look for, and certain things will happen. And that there will be some type of major announcement at some point by some important group. And we couldn't figure out, is it going to be a Pope's announcement or is it going to be a political announcement? But he said, don't try to figure it out. You won't get it. But there's going to be some type of mega announcement, and that's going to direct attention to the Farsight Institute and what you do. And then he said, what's going to happen, there's also going to be a moment in which there's going to be a huge scandal, some type of event that's going to basically discredit almost the entire UFO community that's out there, the big wavers, the big ones. I'm sure you're not in there, Kevin, but the major players out there in the UFO New Age community. And the reason being is that once the public disclosure that remote viewing is real and actually that the extraterrestrial stuff is real, the government would lose the ability to control the agenda, because people would then say, you've been lying to us for so many decades, why should we believe you? Let's believe so-and-so who's been talking on late night radio for so long instead. And so the government's going to have to actually eliminate them as a threat, not physically, but by having some type of scandal, and that some type of major scandal is actually already in the works, everything's set up, but they're not doing it because it's not the right time to do it. But when it looks like there's going to have to be some type of response from the establishment that all this stuff is real, that scandal has to come first to sort of knock everybody out so that the government can still control the agenda. Then he told us a whole bunch of other stuff. I don't need to get into all of that stuff. I know you want to go to the phone lines. But I just want you to know that we're still following the advice that was given during that year in the 1990s. It was an incredible period. So if you ever in the future see us doing amazing things, know from the very beginning, at least from my side of the opinion, from my side of things, it was a collaborative effort from the very beginning, and it was a beautiful experience. For whether it's real or unreal, you can decide for yourself. I'm not asking anyone to believe it. In fact, the remote viewing data studies that we do, we ask people not to believe things, but actually to be skeptical and to participate in the data verification process. So, you know, this is one of those things where I'm not doing that. I'm just telling you the story.
I'm glad you shared all of this with us. I really am. It's a fascinating story, and it sort of pulls the curtain back and lets us see, you know, behind the curtain what was going on. And that's great, man. I really appreciate you doing that. But let's do open the telephone lines. Folks, the telephones are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And if you're in the USA or Canada, please use that number. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, and in this case I also include Alaska and Hawaii, even though they are United States, you may use the flash message feature on our website. You may call us as well, but we know it can be expensive making those international calls, so we have the flash message option for you. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hi.
I'm happy to hear your side of the story with the Art Bell incident. And I talked to Kevin previously, and we talked about that, and he suggested you had your side of the story. So I'm going to re-listen to this, but my question to you is, the gray dude, if he helped you so much and protected your institute during this time, why did you put off when he wanted you to remote view the nuclear explosion? You said you kept on putting it off. And I personally, you know, if this gray dude was helping me out and he said do something, I think I would have jumped on it.
Yeah, we probably should have jumped on it. But, you know, there was a lot going on in that time. I mean, we were the government was trying to shut us down. We had scandals sort of popping up all over the place in unexpected areas that we had no idea about. I mean, they were really doing all types. It was a very lively time. I was so grateful when the time ended. And actually, it was very interesting. I heard on late night radio that people were actually thinking that we had gone out of business, but we didn't. We actually just went out of public, meaning we just started doing our own stuff privately so that we could just avoid the public entirely. It was just pandemonium. And so we never went out of business. We just went private, and it was, I mean, just quiet, and did our stuff, and that was where we made so many great discoveries. And so you're probably right. We should have just jumped on it. But, you know, we were dealing with an awful lot at the time, and it was all new to us. I mean, I had never done anything like this before.
Well, Dr. Brown, I don't want to monopolize time because I know we're short on it. So that was my one question. Thank you for being a guest, and thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
All right. Thank you for the call. As a matter of fact, the first time I contacted you about being on the show, you were just coming out of the non-public era.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, it was just this summer. We had been doing studies. I had been off the radio. I wasn't doing any broadcast, no TV, no radio, ever since, like, you know, the late 90s. And we were, you know, really sort of out, just sort of quiet. And a couple things during that time period, in that early time period, sort of fell into the government's lap, the DIA's lap. For example, remember the Heaven's Gate people who committed suicide? Mm-hmm. They were the eunuchs they had castrated themselves years earlier. I mean, they were very sick people. But they killed themselves, three or four months after Farsight and myself had been totally discredited by that so-called photos incident. So, like, no one was taking us seriously. at the time. But then when they killed themselves, everybody jumped on us again and said, and it was the Farsight people, and Courtney Brown was the ones who were responsible. Everybody who had done everything for the so-called Hail Mary, Hail Bob stuff, they were all pointing at us and saying, you're responsible. What did we do? We didn't.
They also jumped on Art Bell about that.
I won't make any comments about.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. But I mean, there was fallout for Art Bell.
There was fallout for everybody
mm-hmm.
for that type of thing.
Yeah.
The reality is, you know, if you build a road, well, somebody can get killed on that road. Are you guilty for having built a road? mm. Anyway, so what basically happened is that when the Heaven's Gate people killed themselves, that was not something that the DIA had any involvement with. So that just sort of fell into their laps. And, I mean, they just sort of said, this is the end of Farsight and Courtney. We don't have to worry about anything like that again. I mean, those people were nuts, the Heaven's Gate people. And, you know, I mean, they were demonstrably nuts. They were castrating themselves. I mean, they mm-hmm. were eunuchs for years. They were crazy people.
Yeah.
But the point is that sort of fell into them. So when that sort of happened, we said, we have had enough. And so we just said, let us do our science and just study the remote viewing phenomenon, and it wasn't until this summer, 2012, that I said, okay, we put up our studies quietly on our website for all of these years. We became very respected, got peer-reviewed stuff republished. Nobody was laughing anymore after all of these years put in for stuff that was all our scientific stuff. Everyone stopped laughing, and everyone was like sort of waiting to exhale moments. And then this summer I said, you know, we gotta come out. I'm going to go on the radio again. I'll talk to almost anybody that will talk to me. And Kevin, you're one of the first people that called me up and said, we'd like to interview. And I was so grateful that started the whole process. And just in August alone, for example, I did 21 radio interviews, some of which were like 3-4 hours. I mean, it was a major investment of time, and I'm still doing radio interviews, and one of these days maybe some television will be involved, but I decided, you know, it's time for the public to know the results of these studies, and this is the first time ever that I've talked about the history. I've always been, in all of these interviews, I've just been focusing on our projects and hoping people will buy our DVD, The Farsight Experiments, because that's, we gotta pay our bills, and it really helps us. And so, plug, plug, plug. You really help us, and you also get a lot of bang for the buck. And,
Let me say to our caller, just hang on, we will get to you in just a moment. Go ahead. Courtney, go ahead.
Oh, okay. And I also did another project independently called The Crucifixion Ruse, and I sort of wanted people to buy that too. So, we live on a bare-bones budget, bare-bones mm-hmm. budget. And but it's amazing. There has never been a situation, I think, on the history of the planet Earth where so few people and so few resources will end up changing so much. That's what I think is going to happen.
But. All right, let's go to the phone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Lasha from Vancouver.
Lasha, can you hang on through this break?
Absolutely.
All right. And, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and that means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. On the telephone with me is Lasha, and Lasha, did you have a question or comment for Courtney Brown?
Yes, I do. I have a comment and a question.
Uh-huh.
Do you know, it strikes me that for like many thousands of years, advanced meditators have been doing what you term as remote viewing, what they might call bilocation. And I'm wondering, and you know, in light of the fact that this isn't such a new mental process, I think it's a very ancient one, how do you know that you know, what feeling do you have, or what sense do you have that the apparition that you saw that was shiny and the gray dude, I mean, what apparition, or how can you convince yourself that the government wasn't behind that?
Well, a couple things. I never saw the gray dude. The only person who ever saw the gray dude was the webmaster.
Okay.
And the information was, as I said when I mentioned it, was taken just on face value. Regardless of the source, the information itself was incredible. And so, you know, regardless of the source, the information was valuable. But we did get information from really reliable DIA contact people where we were given absolute indication that the person was authentic, that they took this stuff very seriously, and that they considered the gray dude a real pain in the ass. Now, they were as interested as us in terms of what would be reported every morning. And what was very clear also was when we saw it was the gray dude, he was just the contact person that was connecting with the webmaster. But in some of the incidents, there were obviously like a ship that would come down. There apparently were other Zetas around, but it was that particular person, that particular Zeta, that would consistently interact with the webmaster every night. But there apparently were others around nearby, but they didn't get involved. They just sort of stood in the background.
I suppose I'm wondering I'm just being the devil's advocate here, and what if the government set this whole thing up? Pardon my
paranoia. Well, the government people that we were interacting with told us just the opposite. That the only thing they were trying to control the situation. They had a job, and that job was to break up essentially all UFO and serious remote viewing groups. And they did it on a regular basis. So they didn't want any type of real serious UFO group to be taken seriously by mainstream anything. And so they would infiltrate the groups and they would break them up. And they just kept on doing that, breaking them up piece by piece, so none of them could ever grow really big.
I understand that it's very important for the government to control that people, they don't want people to become aware that everybody can do this. That mental telepathy, that bilocation, that all of these things are our birthright. And I think they'd go to pretty far lengths to make sure that they were in control of that information.
Yeah, I actually differ a little bit from the tone of what you're saying. And mm-hmm. And that is, even though I say that the government was involved in these things, I'm very clearly not criticizing the government. Meaning, they were humans like anybody else, and they were doing stuff that is a consequence of what happens when you come into this 3D world. You lose memory of who you are, the telepathy is gone, it was a very difficult type of setting. And what happens is people become polarized. They become believing that there are enemies everywhere, and that you have to conquer your enemies and disrupt them. And it's not that the people are bad, that they want to control us or anything like that. It's that people are like that because of the nature of the environment that we live in, this heavy 3D environment. And so I realized that it was not something that it was useful to criticize, like to criticize the government, because you really have to criticize the entire human species, the entire populace, because we're all like that. And it really takes a lot for a person to evolve out of that. See, the basic tone of your question was polarized. You were looking at the government as being bad, and your view as being good.
Not at all.
And even though you didn't say that, that came across. But that's polarized thinking. And that's exactly what the result is. People side up on one side or the other. And that's
no,
the
I'm
consequence of where we are.
No, I'm not looking at them as being bad. I'm looking at them as being afraid.
Yes, that also happens.
And I think what I'd like to do is look at a bigger picture. let's assume that, you know, way back at the, you know, even before the First and Second World War, there really was technology that allowed people to almost work towards weaponizing telepathy.
Well, actually, we know now from stuff I haven't published yet, but I will eventually, that there were civilizations on Earth, us humans, before our current civilization, and at least one of them was really advanced, more advanced than we are now. And so just to say, go back to World War II and they were doing this and it looked like it was advanced, the reality was nothing that's going on now in our human world isn't something that we haven't tried before in a previous version of our civilization that basically destroyed itself. And so this, you know, there is nothing really new now. So that's why I look at the sort of history of sort of saying something happened 30 years ago that was a squandering of a great thing. And I say, no, actually nothing happened 30 years ago that was really relevant. I mean, it was just, we are who we are, and we've been through this all before, and we're doing the same mistakes that we made earlier, like long, long, long time ago when we were a different type of a civilization, but still us. And, you know, we would constantly keep repeating ourselves probably if we didn't get help. That's why I'm sort of thinking, especially given my experience with the ET involvement with Farsight, is that apparently we're getting help. And
okay,
I'm sort of thinking that...
Let me break in right here for just a moment because we're just about out of time. Let me tell everybody, we're going to go into after hours. Because I think there may be some more folks who want to call. Lasha, thank you for the call. But there may be some more folks who want to call. And we're going to give you a few minutes to... Courtney has said he'll stay with us a few minutes into after hours. And so we'll give you a few minutes to call. And the way that works is if the phones are ringing, we'll stay here and he'll keep answering your questions. And when the phones go silent, then we'll sign off. That's the way it works. Okay, Lasha, thanks for the call. You know, I identify a lot with what Lasha said about she looks at them as being afraid. But I identify with that because you know, I've worked for the government, and all government is fear-based. Not every individual job, but the reason governments are formed is fear-based. So there's not really much probability they're ever going to move away from that. They are there to protect us from our enemies. That's the thinking. And, you know, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just recognizing, I'm observing that that's how they're formed. And, you know, why are courts in existence? Courts are in existence to decide cases where there's a dispute and you have an opponent who says A and you say B. And so the courts are there to protect those who are in the right. I mean, that's the thinking. So everything about government, its very existence, is fear-based in any country. All right, we have to sign off, and we'll do that, but then we'll be right back. My friends call me Steele-Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, and in this case, until we come back for after hours... So long, everybody.